Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This is enough of madness. This is enough. Welcome to the Mouth of Manliness. With me, Nick Noyes, as ever. We are on Zoom again. And I'm very, very pleased to welcome my guest today is Lord Zion.
Yeah, well done.
I've been telling myself all day not to say.
Don't say Zion.
Because I initially read your name as Zion.
Yeah.
Then I watched a few bits on YouTube and saw it was Zion, and I've been telling myself all day, do not fucking say it. Yeah.
You won't be the last.
No. I know. It's just the coolest name in all the land. It's just brilliant.
Well, it's not a fun name to grow up with, but...
Well, I can imagine. So, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Zion wrote a book called Life Amid Crisis, and I read loads. So I was kind of going through Amazon trying to find something to read, and then I saw your book, and initially I kind of I thought it was like a rock star biography, which it kind of is in a way, but it's also so much more. And so initially, I like rock star autobiographies, period, anyway. I love them. And then when it started talking about struggles and overcoming, and I was like, right, get it. And I was blown away by it. I absolutely loved it.
Oh, thank you.
And then, it's really, really honest, and you're really straightforward in the way you say things. So it kind of, it was a really kind of easy to read, which is always brilliant. And I don't know, what happened to me, I think I'd read one bit in particular that really kind of resonated with me about childhood and that kind of thing. And then I was like, I wonder if I could get him on. I thought I'll just hit you up on. And then you were on Instagram, and I got you on.
I'm cheap and easy.
Yeah, it did. And it's
free and easy, in fact.
Yeah. That's what I like, bro. That's great. So, yeah. When did you do the book then? How long ago was it?
I think it was 2016, 17, around about that sort of time. Basically, I moved from your kind of end of the country to the opposite end of the country, and that coincided with me coming to the realization that I actually thought that I was fed up with doing the band stuff. And when that is all you have ever done and all you've devoted your life to, and all of a sudden you admit to yourself, actually, I'm not enjoying this anymore, you're kind of left thinking, well, now what do I do? And I mean, to be honest with you, I still haven't got a clue. Is this a sweary show or a non-sweary show?
You can swear, man, I swear.
Right. Okay. So I just started writing down my thoughts. presuming that if I wrote things down, I would come to some sort of conclusion, which meant that I could get on with my life and go and start being something else wonderful. And I kind of failed at the latter bit. But by the time I finished, I realized that I had a book of sorts. So I thought, well, you know, I got some people out there that would probably want to read it. So I released it. And then you found it.
Yeah. And I think it paid off because, like, there was loads of bits in there that really kind of worked for me. There was a lot, there's a lot of kind of, like, I tried to make it, well, you made it in music, I mean, but I tried to make it in music. So there was a lot of bits like that I could really relate to, you know, touring and sleeping in pubs and shit like that. I could really relate to a lot of that. But then what I also really, really liked about, well, what I liked about you was that, like, you're not afraid to give things a go. Like, the amount of things you've done, if you took your book and thought about your kind of lifeline between, you know, birth and there, the amount of different things you've done that you've kind of, like, you commit to it and you go for it. You know, like making a film, writing a screenplay, that kind of thing. And I really admire that. You know, it's like, no, I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to learn how to do it and then I'm going to do it. And I find that inspiring.
That's nice to hear. I wish I could kind of inspire myself a little bit more at the moment because I'm feeling extremely lazy. But I think a lot of that is probably down to, I think partly what I have is slightly bipolar.
Yeah.
So you have the manic episodes where you just are completely invincible and think, yep, I can do everything, and you go ahead and do it. And then you have the flip side of that, which is, how much longer can I stay in bed today before it becomes a bit antisocial? And I'm kind of been going through that sort of phase quite a lot lately.
So, I kind of have that. I'm massive creative. Everything I do is creative. And then, and then I have slumps and I can't do anything. And I used to really beat myself up at those points where I wasn't producing and didn't feel like I was achieving anything. But I just kind of accept now that I have those periods, however long they are, where I'm like, I just kind of just go, okay, I'm just going to take it easy on myself for a while and then I'll kick myself up the arse. But I tend to roll with things much more than I used to. I used to fight everything and that makes it so much harder.
I have found one of the things that I've sort of explored myself is mindfulness and living in the moment, which I find really, really helpful. Yeah. But of course, the flip side of that is that you're not thinking ahead and you're not thinking, I need to get this done or what do I need to do to achieve this? You're just thinking, ooh, the sun's out. It's nice today. This makes me feel good. So, you know, swings and roundabouts, I guess.
Yeah, there's a balance in there, isn't there? It's like a bit of mindfulness. I tend to try. I have to remind myself to be mindful and to be in the moment. Like, that doesn't come very easily to me.
No.
But then I also need things to get excited about, and I need things to kind of look forward to and have a project on the go. Otherwise, I need to kind of force myself in the momentum.
Yeah. Well, I've been looking forward to this. This has been something that I've been looking forward to.
I'm pleased because I have as well. So tell me, tell us about the things you've done then. So your band was Spit on This?
Spit like this. Yeah. Spit on This probably would have been better, actually.
Spit on This, yeah. Spit on This sounds a bit kind of corny, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, but you play some massive gigs, though. You've done some amazing things with that.
Yeah. It went well. Better than expected, I guess. Especially for the sort of band that we were. We weren't in any way a sort of mainstream sort of band that you know, should have achieved some huge success and didn't. We were sort of quite a niche band. But within our field, we did well and we got well known. Big fish in a small pond is probably the best description of it. And yeah, we you know, got to travel and play around Europe, and I played with a lot of bands that I grew up listening to, which is a very odd experience.
Yeah.
One that mostly kind of backfires because I then couldn't listen to them for ages because most of them turned out to be complete arseholes. But yeah, we did well. We did a lot. And when I think back, well, you know what it's like. You look back on life and as a whole, it all just has disappeared so quickly, and you just kind of wrap life into, you just wrap it up, and it's just this thing that exists. But actually, if you stretch it out and look at it in a linear way, and you go, oh, I did that, and then I did that, and then I did that, then your accomplishments and achievements seem a bit better.
Yeah, I think you have to do a bit of that, though, don't you? Especially if there's good things in there. Think back about, yeah, actually, I've done loads of good stuff. And you think, you know, like I was saying about your book, like, if you look at it, it's like, it's quite a life. It's quite a lot of good things and exciting things you've been able to do and achieve. And, you know, you're not ready to sit down yet either. So it's kind of, I think it's important to do that. I really do. And then the other thing, I really like the film as well. The zombie one, like that sounds brilliant. That sound, I'd always love to have done that. You know, like to make a film. Just amazing.
Well, you can. You just like do it.
Yeah.
I tell you, like, I can't remember. It's been a long time since I read my own book. I'm not that much of a, you know, sit on the toilet wanking, reading my own book. But basically, we as a band were asked to be in a film. And during the downtimes, I was watching, I was thinking, I can fucking do this. You know, there's nothing here that's absolutely extraordinary. It's just people and someone in charge saying, can you do this, please? So I thought, yeah, I could do that. So I wrote a screenplay. I spent a long time, probably 6 months in preparation, reading everything that I could, because the screenplay format is very specific and there's not much prose in it. You know, it's direction and conversation, basically. So I taught myself how to do that, and I wrote a 2-hour long sci-fi, like dystopian epic sort of film. Yeah. Finished it. One of the greatest achievements of my life, you know, printing it out and actually holding a screenplay and going, wow, I wrote a film. Yeah. And then realizing that there's no way in hell that I'd ever be able to get a 2-hour long, like sci-fi dystopian by asking my mates, hey, can you hold this, please? Yeah. So I went back to the drawing board and thought, well, zombies, they're like easy and horror is cheap. So that's when I wrote Meet the Cadavers, which is about a family of zombies, basically. And then just did the usual. I advertised on Star Now, and that's how I got a lot of the crew, and also a friend who was a director, who I'd been in one of his films in Norway, and you know, he came on board, but unfortunately his mum died right at the beginning of production, so all of a sudden I was the only producer, so I had to teach myself how the hell you actually put a film together and get everyone coordinate. That's the biggest thing, the big sheets of paper that you have, coordinating everyone to be in specific places at specific times to do specific things, that is a head fuck. And looking back on it, I think, how the hell did I do that? But clearly I was having a good day, because
so do you think, like, in those kind of situations you're kind of running on a high, and because it's like the pressure kind of keeps you up so you don't have the slump, or did you have slumps in the middle of it?
I think it's just got to be done.
Yeah.
You know, when you've committed a certain amount of money and you've committed time and you've got other people involved, that's what does it for me. When other people are involved, then I'll do whatever to make sure that something gets done. Yeah. If it's just for me, then I have a harder time.
Yeah, like I tend to make myself commit to things.
Yeah.
So then I'll fucking do it. Otherwise, I won't do anything. You know, like, I quite easily do nothing.
Yeah, like one of the gigs that we did was in Germany, playing the Wacken Festival, which is, what is it, northeast Germany, something like that. I think it was a 1,200 mile round trip. And when I look back on that now and think we drove 1,200 miles to play for half an hour or something like that, what the fuck were we thinking? And just the logistics of that as well. It's quite, because, you know, it's not just us. We had like a little roadie and stuff like that. But yeah, you just, at the time, you do it and you don't really think much of it. It's only later on, after the fact, when you've become older and lazier, that you look back on it and think, I don't quite understand how I managed to do all of that, but I did, so I figure I could probably do it again.
Yeah, I figure, like, you know, like, I try not to overthink things, because I think, like, to some extent, you know, life's about those experiences, you know, like those really cool things that you look back on. And yeah, if you overthink it, you'll be like, fucking hell, that's too far, that's going to cost too much money, there's no way we're going to do it. And like, sometimes you just got to go, fuck it, do it. And like, that's kind of, that came across in your book. It's like, no, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to learn how to do it, and I'm going to do it. And then I carried that with me, like, for doing, like, the podcast. I was doing it with another guy, he left.
All right.
I learned how to do everything.
Right.
I've never done any production, anything like that. And it was like, oh, no, I'm going to do it. That's it. And I, like, that kind of spirit, you know, that backs me up and pushes me along. So, you know, yeah, your book kind of spoke to me in that way, which is amazing.
That's been the thing that sort of surprised me the most about the reaction that I've got, which has been, I must say, overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah.
Is that people, I thought it was just going to be, you know, my fans who buy it and read about the band stuff and not really care too much about the other stuff. But it went beyond that, and the amount of people, you know, men, women, some into music, some not into music, where they got it, you know, they'd experienced similar things. And even though they might not have been in a band or anything like that, everybody's life experiences are similar, so you can draw, you know, you can draw upon other people's experiences even if you've not done exactly the same thing. If that,
yeah, it's like we're all basically humans going through trials and tribulations, and whatever, you know, there's always going to be something in people's stories, isn't there? And I think people's stories are the most interesting things in the world because of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, there's always saying that we can kind of take from it.
Mm.
So, yeah, no, I just found it brilliant. I really loved it. And I strongly recommend it to anyone who's listening.
Yes, so do I.
Yeah. Then, see how I can get some cash. So there was, like, kind of going back then, so you, what I also really like is that kind of when you describe, like, your younger life, a lot of it's kind of, you kind of seems like you're quite self-conscious and that kind of thing, which I totally was. And then, but yet you kind of went through that and then were able to kind of perform at that kind of level. So where do you think where does that come from? How do you think, what was it that managed to push you along that way?
A necessity, I think.
Yeah.
I was just a normal kid growing up, and I didn't know that there was anything odd about me until I went to school and was kindly told by all the children around me that I was odd and a weirdo, and, you know, I had a stupid name, I was fat, and I looked like a girl. So basically, you know, school was not fun.
Yeah.
And I was bullied throughout it. And I mean, one of the things that I learned was humour. Yeah, I became very quick-witted and was able to dissipate a lot of the aggression just through humour. But beyond that, as I got older, I just embraced the fact that it didn't matter, because I went through a small period where I tried to fit in, you know, get the right trainers, get the right trousers, you know, jeans, that sort of thing. Tried to fit in, and I realised, no, it doesn't matter what I do, I'm always going to be singled out. And that has gone, you know, throughout my life, you know, into adulthood and stuff, regardless of how much of a Wally I am dressing like or whatever. I was just singled out. You know, I sometimes feel like I got a big X above my head pointing down, go, that one there. So yeah, I just learned to embrace that, I guess, and think, well, okay, if I'm going to be, there's no point me trying to fit in because that doesn't work. So I'll just do what I want and be how I want to be and behave the way that I want to behave. And some people will like it and some people won't. I guess that was one of the things that when I realized that it's okay that not everybody likes me, because I was fortunate in so much as I did have some very good friends, some close friends. I wasn't a loner, but I was just, you know, bullied by the bigger boys. So I realized that people will like me and some people won't like me, and I won't adapt my behavior to try and suit anyone. I'll just be me, and some will gravitate towards and some will be repelled.
And then as you got older, the fact that you were different was the thing that helped you, I think, probably.
Yeah, it helped, like getting up on stage and doing that sort of thing. It certainly helps if you look a bit different, and have a slightly different personality to other people.
Yeah.
Something they might not have seen before. I don't know. I didn't give that side of things that much thought. I just, as I mentioned in the book, I did at school all of a sudden in drama one day, I was sitting there and I was notoriously just ignored in drama the whole time, which really wound me up. And one day my ears pricked up because I heard them say something about a pop mime. And I thought, what's this then? And I listened, and it was basically that they were going to do exactly what it sounded like, a pop mime. And that was just at the point where, like, Def Leppard and Guns N' Roses, those bands had just broken big. So I thought, right, fuck it, I'm going to do this. Our school was quite big, like 1,500 pupils, something like that. So my band was chosen to be one of the bands that went around the school to show the school what the pop mime's going to be about. So I did Def Leppard for my first one. And the moment that it finished and I stuck my arm up in a triumphant, like, rock star-y thing, and all these kids cheered at me, and that was it. That was the life-changing moment. I thought, oh, yeah, I want some more of it. This is medicine. I'll have more of this, thank you very much. And from that moment onwards, that was what I wanted to do.
That's so cool. That's a really nice kind of defining moment as well, isn't it? And it's almost like that's your kind of fingers up to them, you know, that moment. Like, fuck you all.
Yeah, that was because my school life changed after that. The people that bullied me all of a sudden saw me in a completely different way, and the bullying stopped overnight, which was bizarre. So not only did I learn, you know, how much the power of applause, you know, washes over you and makes you feel really good. I also learned of the actual power that there was in being this focus, this central focus, this, you know, you're in a position of power and you have something over these people who up until that point had, maybe they had a physical power over you, but they obviously sort of, you know, it didn't extend beyond that.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. I really like that in the book, actually. It kind of, I don't know. It's always nice to hear someone kind of overcoming the bullies anyway. And it's funny how many people I encounter who have had troubles with, like, bullies and at school, and it's really, like, gone on to impact them, like, significantly. It just really fucking winds me up. But, you know, I know, like, at school, like, I could be an arsehole sometimes. But then I was more like you, that I was kind of, if someone was trying to be horrible to me, I was normally pretty quick and could be quite funny and cutting. And then I'd kind of overcome it. But then, you know, like, sometimes if everyone's having a go at you, you then have a go at someone below you to make you feel a bit better. You know, I've certainly been guilty of that.
That's all bullying is. You know, bullying starts at the bully's home.
Their
dad or parents or big brother that are doing it to them, so they fight down.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know how kids cope these days. Because at least I could go home and I could get away from it for a night. But now, you know, they have it online and
Yeah, I've got my daughter's 12, and I mean, I don't really think she kind of enters into anything particularly like that at the moment, but she might, you know. Like, I'm not checking on her all day long, but I think they cope with it the same way we cope with it, really. You know, like, that's the kind of, I work with teenagers, and there's not, like, everyone kind of really worries about social media and all, but in fairness, it's all much of a much, and it's all much the same. You know, right. Just like, they cope with it because they live with it all their lives, whereas we didn't, yeah. You know. So they just get on with it.
I'll stop worrying about them then.
Hey?
I'll stop worrying about them then.
Don't worry about the youth. <Fuck them.
laughs> Back to me.
Yeah. You know, it's always so much of that. I'm like, I can't be stressing about everyone else when I'm fucking fighting an internal battle every day as it is. How can I possibly deal with other shit? But like, I think sometimes dealing with other shit actually helps you with your own shit. Mm. Like, that certainly makes a difference for me. You know, just generally, like, it takes your mind off of things. So, you know, so when you were younger, did you, when you think about now, when you think about, like, now you've kind of got an understanding of your own mental health, did you... can you look back on it and think that you were really, like, depressed or anything when you were much younger?
Therapy for me started aged around about 8. And that was when people first started to notice that I was, like, extremely withdrawn and said things. You know, I spoke about, like, killing myself and stuff like that at that sort of age.
No, really, so, like, just similar to me, really. Yeah, I was much the same.
I guess, like, I mean, fortunately, at that age, I was probably a bit stupid and didn't really know how you'd go about doing something like that. But they, they took me to a child psychiatrist and I saw them for a while. You know, I was always up and down as a kid, and then it really, really struck me in my late teens, early adulthood, where my brain just went, and I was diagnosed as like borderline schizophrenic, and like with sort of more traditional depression, and I had schizophrenia. There was like a voice in my head, like a mechanical, almost robotic voice, and this is something that I'd had since I was, like, for as long as I could remember, but because I'd always had it, I didn't know you weren't supposed to have it.
Yeah.
So it was just something that, like, accompanied me as I would play or whatever, and every now and then I'd act out on its instructions, and as I got older, it became louder and more insistent is the only way to talk, sort of describe it, until I found myself, like, with a knife holding it up against a friend's throat and snapped out of that moment and realized that this was really serious and I really needed to, like, try and sort this shit out. And at the same time, I developed an overwhelming, I don't know if it's illogical, but certainly extraordinary fear of death and dying. You know, I think it all dawned on me that, yeah, I'm not religious. So I don't have any thoughts on an afterlife or anything like that. And that overwhelmed me. Like, one thing that will always, there used to be a Kodak advert, and in the advert it said the colors of life. And just that would make me sort of break down. And there were so many things that I could not watch and I couldn't be a part of, because everything just reminded me of the fact that one day I wasn't going to exist. And I wasn't very happy about that at all.
And the voice at the same time.
Yeah. So, and I mean, I was 19, 20, that sort of age.
Yeah, that's fucking...
was into music. So I had, at the time, my hair was blonde. So I had long blonde hair and I just looked like, you know, I look like a Motley Crue reject. And I go to the psychiatrist, and of course they just see this thing in front of them, probably just assume that I'm on drugs or whatever, and they pretty much you know, ignored me and told me to go away. And it took a lot to then go back. Like 5 years later, something like that, was when I had my first like real, like suicide, my bout of suicidal depression, where I wanted to kill myself. And it took so much for me to actually take myself to see someone at that point, because I thought I was just going to get rejected again.
It's madness that you have to really fight your corner to get any kind of mental health support. Like, I've had to do it so many times.
Yeah.
Like, you have to go in and be a right arsehole about it before they'll actually do something. And you're like, look, just look at my records. You know, like, surely you could tell there's a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. If I've been going to a psychiatrist since 8, then, you know, maybe things aren't quite right up there.
Yeah.
And, because, I mean, my spiral was just, there was just one day I was at home and I was by myself and I was like listening to music, and it was, you know how music, and it just like completely, you know, you become enveloped with it and you turn it up more, and it just seems to be, it can never be loud enough. It just needs to really sink itself in. It was one of those sorts of days. And I just thought, that's it. I'm going to fucking do it, because I just can't take this shit anymore. And, you know, my car was in the garage, which was attached to this room. I thought, I'll go in there and I'll sit in the car, turn the engine on. And so I started scribbling notes, like to family. And it was almost like automatic writing, you know, like you see these people where it's almost like they're being, you know, something's channeling through them, and there's just...
Yeah, I do automatic artwork.
Oh, right. Oh, that's interesting. But yeah, I couldn't tell you what I was writing.
Yeah.
And that, just that pause gave me enough headspace to take myself away from the situation. And I basically just like ran to the doctors, which was, it wasn't that close, unfortunately. And by the time I got there, it was closed. But all of that was enough headspace for me to sort of come back down. So then I was able to book an appointment. And but that was my first big experience with feeling suicidal. And, you know, it scared the hell out of me. But, you know, I don't want to die, ever. You know, by my own hands.
Yeah, in the midst of your, like, being afraid of dying, it just totally turned on its head.
Yeah.
But, like, that's almost like you're just saying, like, I can't fucking do it.
Live this is going to end anyway. That was my thinking. Was part of it was, oh my god, I can't bear to go through the next however long being tormented by this thought of what's next.
Yeah,
let's just get it over and done with. And it was almost like, you know, my stupid, like going back to my late teens, my stupid childlike brain was thinking, if I did that, then I could just get on with things. You know, and then you go, no, wait, that's not how it works. But yeah, there's been an awful lot of that, you know, even more recently, where my most recent experience was, might have been 2015, winter of 2015, something like that. And that was, for the first time, it didn't scare me. And that, in itself, scared me a lot more than all, like the previous times, where, you know, fear was one of the things that would hold me back from doing anything. Whereas now it was just more of a sort of resigned to the fact that you're probably going to do this one day, so you might as well do it and it'll be done. And
I've certainly been there myself so many times, where you're like, you just kind of get numb to it after a while. You know, like, people are like, you go to the doctors. Every time I go to the doctors, they're like, right, do you feel suicidal? How suicidal? 1 to 10. And like, it's like they have to go through the list. And there's been times that I'm like, 10, 9, 10, every time. And they're almost like, they look at me with shock and fear. And I'm like, what? Like, that's fucking normal. That is just normal. That's how I live my life. I've been telling you, you know, this is how I live my life. And like, I don't anymore, luckily enough. I had like a moment when I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to do it. I've never done it. I'm not going to do it. And what would happen if I kind of just told myself, I'm not going to fucking do it, so I'm just going to stop using that as almost like that was my safe place. You know, like that's my, you know, like everything gets so bad, so I just go to suicidal thoughts. You know, like everything's so bad, I'm going to kill myself. And it's then the one comfort. Day, hey, go on.
It's a comfort.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then one day I was just like, look, I'm not going to do it. Like, I haven't done it now. I actually don't think I'm ever going to fucking do it. And now I've got kids in that, I'd be a right arse if I did anyway. And I just, basically, from that moment on, I was like, no, I'm just not, I refuse to get into it anymore. It's like, I've wasted most of my life doing it. And I was like you know, you said, like, when you're younger, and like, I was obsessed with death and killing myself. You know, like, I used to sit and write, like, I always had it in my head, oh, I'll show you when I'm dead, you'll see. You know, like, and I used to think about all the things I've got and which one of my friends would have that when I die, and you know, almost like writing out eulogies, and I used to hide them in boxes and things like that. And it was only, you know, later on, like, it's almost like all of that kind of just disappeared. And then it was only like going through therapy, like the last few years, when I remember, like, I used to do that. So I think I was a bit obsessed with death. And then obviously I got into fucking like the Doors and that. And then you're like, well, then, or you get into like fucking metal, and that just confirms it all, doesn't it? It's like, oh, this is a lifestyle as well. You know, like Jim Morrison, yeah, he's cool. So, and then everything you like just suddenly backs everything up. And like, I realised that I've been just been backing up all of this stuff that I've been telling myself forever. And it kind of came to, and then, whoa, fucking, can you believe it? I'm suicidal, you know, of course I am. It was just, yeah, it's a really shitty way to fucking live and be. It
really, I think we're not, you know, we like to think that we're in control of things, and we're not. Clearly we're not. Like, I mean, this lockdown that we've had for the last few months shows us we are not in control.
No, we're not in control of fuck all.
And I think that the option of suicide, it gives you a sense of control back.
Yeah.
I might not be able to do anything about the outcome. I might not be able to deal with this shitty hand that I've been dealt, but this is one thing that I can do.
Yeah, and I think like that's often where the comfort comes in, is that if it gets so bad, like if my brain and everything in life is so shit, I can do something about it, and that's in my hands. Yeah, it's very true. But I kind of, I don't know, my therapist said to me about that you can't control anything but what you do and what you think. And the idea that I could control what I think had never occurred to me. It took me till I was 42 to think, oh, fuck, what? What? Like, so all this shit that I'm telling myself, like, you're a fucking piece of shit, like, everyone hates you, you know, you're rubbish. I was like, oh, what? Like, I don't have to think that.
You can change the narrative.
Yeah. And it was very much about narratives, and I was reading a lot of things at the time as well that kind of supported it. And it really, really made a difference for me. It was like my brain is hardwired from a very young age of being told I was shit to getting older to thinking I was shit. So my brain's kind of hardwired to go that way.
Yeah.
So then I realised that I have to kind of put in the work to stop it. But essentially, like, I've got to a point, like, after putting in a few years of doing it a lot, like, now I can kind of see it, hear it, you know, my brain's going, yeah, oh, yeah, you do, you're telling me I'm shit and everything's shit and everything's negative. Now I can kind of catch myself and go, and like the mindfulness thing, you know, rather than fighting it, I just go, okay, like my brain's trying to protect me, from disappointment or whatever, I'll just go, oh, all right, fair enough, brain. I know you're there to help me. So I don't get fucked off with it in the same way. Go, all right, brain, I don't need you right now. I know what I'm doing. And I kind of just have that narrative in my head.
Yeah.
And it really helps. It really helps.
Interesting perspective that your brain is trying to protect you from disappointment.
Well, they say that your brain, our brain's kind of like we have the amygdala in your brain, apparently. The main part, like this part, is primarily is there to, hasn't changed since caveman times, and it's there to stop you getting into danger and getting hurt and getting eaten. And as we've evolved, we don't really need that, but it's still there. So it's always looking for negatives to make sure you don't fall into them. Or if you do say it goes, oh, you shouldn't have done that because this and this and this and this. So it's always just, it's always going to be a bit negative because that's its job, to look for problems so you don't get hurt. And like that kind of, those kind of words to me were like, I'm not so fucked off with it now. You know, like I'm not so angry with it now because it's kind of doing what it's meant to be doing. And then I realised that all through my life, all these things that I'm saying to myself that, you know, that made me depressed basically and made me mentally ill was basically that.
Right.
It was that thing going, you know, don't talk to girls because, like, you'll only get dumped or your mates will take the piss out of you or something like that. You know, like, for years, frightened of girls. It's like, that's my brain trying to protect me from rejection. And it all just kind of came together. And then, like, the therapist goes, yeah, like, let it talk, but you don't have to, like, do any of it. You know, like, you don't actually have to take it on board. It's going to be talking to you anyway. So don't have a fucking fight with it. Just go, all right, but I'm going to do this. And I tell you what, like, it's really ridiculous and it just sounds so, it sounds like just kind of really glib, but like that saved me. It saved me. I think it's, you know, it's not actually being too strong to say I think it saved my life. Because ever since like that and kind of constant reinforcing it, I've moved on. I really have. It's made such a big difference. Because, yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, your brain does that. What? Your brain does that? Yeah, it really helped me.
Yeah, I'm going to try and remember that because that's, I know it sounds really stupid for someone that, like, used to get up on stage and prance around in, you know, silly clothes, but I don't have much of an ego.
Yeah.
And if I find myself feeling big-headed, I try and, like, bash the ego down a bit. But, you know, I don't think highly of myself, or I don't think well of myself, and my internal narrative, monologue, whatever, is not very kind to myself.
Yeah.
And I know that that's the wrong way to think, but, you know, you're so... you're not always conscious of what you're thinking. It's just nattering away in the background.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it's all piss and vinegar in your ear hole, I guess it takes over you a bit. But I don't have the ego to say, shut up, I'm amazing, or anything like that.
Yeah, no, and I'm exactly the same. And because like, I always thought I was shit, I was like, well, you know, it's clearly right. You know, like, that part of my brain's clearly right. And now, because, like, I'm doing this, and, you know, like, you think, well, I can't be that shit if I'm helping people.
Yeah.
You know, like, your book helped me, so you can't be that shit, you know? So you think, like, it's not about ego, it's just about almost being realistic and thinking, well, no,
yeah,
it's not right, is it? It's just not right.
Try being in a band where you get reviewed and they confirm your worst fears about yourself. That's not much fun.
Yeah.
You know, because that's, you know, you have to overcome that.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way that you can move forward is to be shit. You know, at the band, you know, at the beginning, you're shit. That's it. But you have to ignore that you're shit and carry on to get to the point where you are no longer shit.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You get those little glimmers, didn't you? Like, oh shit, we're all in tune today. Maybe you can do it. You had those little glimmers, which is great about bands. But did you find like often in bands, like no one really talks. Like we're a band of fucking brothers. We're all in this together. We're going to go and take over the world and tour the world. But no one ever actually really talks much. You know,
what, like each other.
Yeah, like in any depth.
Bit of backstory for, like, I mean, you probably know,
half,
but my other half was the bass player. So obviously we spoke, and we lived with our drummer for, I don't know how many years, many, many years. And he had a severe alcohol problem that we were trying to help him with, which is why he moved in with us. So we would have very in-depth conversations because he was very open. Not necessarily with the other members of the band that we had sort of coming and going.
So your relationship must be really important to you, because you've been together, it sounds like, for a long time, and you've been together most of it all together.
Well, neither of us have had like proper jobs, as it were. So we've lived together, you know, full time when we moved in together, which was pretty much straight away. And been together nearly 20 years now. And obviously doing the band stuff. And we started a t-shirt company as well to help fund the band stuff. So, you know, we're still together now. I don't think that I would be here, you know, if it weren't for, I don't mean on this podcast, I mean on the earth, if it weren't for her, because she cared more about me than I cared about me. So she would research things that could help me, and she would contact the doctors for me, and make me, you know, make me go, and make me, when a drug wasn't working for me, you know, my thing would be, oh, you know, none of this works and all that sort of thing. And she would make me go back and try another one.
Yeah, so, yeah, you need that though, don't you? If you're on a hole, you need someone to kick you up the arse after a bit and go, right, come on, just fucking get it sorted out.
Yeah.
That's what my wife does to me. She still has to do it sometimes, you know, like on a Saturday when I'm in bed at 1 o'clock and she's like, what are you doing? Like, I'm enjoying the sleep. She's like, no, you'll feel shit when you get up, and then you'll feel guilty, and then you'll drink loads tonight because you think you won't get to sleep. I'm like, oh, shit.
She's on to me.
Yeah, exactly what I'm going to do. So, we're getting up to the hour, but there's a few more things I wanted to kind of talk about, really, was you've always done a fair bit of exercise. Does that help you?
I try and understand why I do that. I started doing it when I was 18, 19. Like I mentioned, I was very much overweight. And shortly after my 18th birthday, I'd gone away. I saw a picture of myself and I was just at my biggest. I thought, right, I got to sort this out. I moved out of my mum and dad's house, and within like 3 months I was skin and bone. So I had a good sort of, you know, a good place to then start from. And I just started exercising with weights and stuff. That's my preferred, you know, that's my go-to is weightlifting. And so I think it's born out of vanity initially. I don't know. It's part of my identity now. You know, what am I? Fucking hell, I had a birthday last week. I'm 48 now. And, you know, I've still got abs and that sort of thing. And I look at some contemporaries, you know, that I went to school with, and they look like they're from a different generation to me.
They're all fat and skinny, aren't they?
I mean, a lot of that is I've not had children. I've not had mortgages. So, you know, I've not had those sort of stresses, which I know don't help.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe I've got some good genes or something as well. But I don't know, I can't imagine life without exercise. It's just something that I do every day. So yeah. It's what is good is that there are so many days where you can't be asked to exercise, or because my gym is outside and I live in the north. So, you know, it's snowing, it's raining, any of those things. And you just say, oh my God, I've got to go out there and I've got to do this. But you do it. And there's such a sense of achievement, even though, you know, it's not a massive thing, but it still does at least give you some sort of like little pat on the back and let you know that maybe you're not completely useless after all.
Yeah.
You know, you can do these little things. And also it's a good time for me to clear my head. It's good thinking time.
Yeah. I started running with my daughter. I haven't done a lot of it yet. I was always so self-conscious as a child, and like no one played sports with me or anything. So I've got this like proper aversion to, like, you know, you will never see me run. Like, no one I know has ever seen me run anywhere, you know, because I never do anything like that. Mostly because I think like I'm quite tall and I feel quite really self-conscious,
right?
And I'm fucking awkward and I fall over, and if there's a ball being kicked, it's going to hit me in the face or the nuts, no matter, even if it is a mile away. And so I just have this aversion to it, but I'm starting trying. I'm tentatively trying just because I know it's really good for your mental health.
Mm.
And then also it's good for your self-esteem, right? You know, if you feel like you look all right. I mean, I'm quite lucky. I'm generally quite skinny. But yeah, I feel like it's probably worthwhile. But there was something else you said in the book that it wasn't, I'm sure it wasn't medication, it was something else that you swear by, like a tablet or something that you take. I'm sure Tyler something or other. I was trying to remember it.
I have, beyond the, you know, prescribed medication, I take supplements to help up there. 5-HTP, which is quite a common one, theanine.
That's it.
Which is really good. What else is there? There's, I can never pronounce it because it's got a really stupid name, but it's, I can't even remember what it's called at the moment. Can I just nip off? I'll get the thing. I'll show you what it is. Is that all right?
Yeah.
There you go, you read it.
I can't read it.
Is it focused?
Yeah, it's not. Look at me. I'm like, no, I can't read it.
Dl-phenylalanine, something like that.
Dl-phenylalanine. Oh, right, phenylalanine.
There's too many syllables.
Yeah, there is. So what are they? What's the other one? So what are they exactly? What feeling? The other one you said,
5-HTP, basically helps with the production of serotonin.
Right.
My problem is that I don't have. I mean, most people that have a depression, you know, it's based around serotonin.
Yeah.
So I don't have much serotonin, and so 5-HTP just helps you produce a bit more. Theanine is an amino acid, and it just helps with your stress levels. And it helps you see things a bit more clearly. So instead of, if you've got loads of stuff coming up or just in front of you and you're feeling overwhelmed, it kind of just helps you pick your way through it and just see it just in a calmer manner.
So
for example, like whenever I go away, I get really stressed with all the things like the packing and stuff like that. It just seems like all these, you know, all these things that have to be done before you get on the plane and fuck off somewhere.
Yeah.
And that used to really stress me out, but I take the L-theanine and it just lets me stay calmer.
What, you just take it when you feel like stress coming on? Or you take
I just take it daily. I just, everything that helps, I just take it daily. I just shovel it in. Mm. This stuff I discovered more recently And again, it just helps with stress. I can't necessarily, it's not like we're with L-theanine where you could definitely say, oh, this is how it helps with stress.
Yeah.
This helps in a much less specific way, but quite a lot. So I would recommend that, certainly.
I certainly wanted to cover that because, yeah, I remember you mentioning it. And then I saw you put some stuff on Insta, I think. And I thought, I definitely want to ask about that because that kind of stuff's really useful for people to know, I think. Like, that's kind of easy wins, isn't it? Easy wins. Like, why wouldn't you give it a go?
The amount of supplementation that I take is absolutely ridiculous. Because, you know, I sell supplements as well. And since I was like, since I started working out, I've been teaching myself about supplementation. So I know a lot about it. So yeah, I mean, this stuff, I would go for this stuff more than I would go for the medication that I'm prescribed, because I think that this is more effective.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, medication,
what is it about? Because all of this stuff is stuff that your body produces or gets from food. It just may be, you know, maybe it's just not able to, you know, extract it in quite the quantities that it needs. Or, I mean, something like vitamin D, which is a really helpful supplement, but it's a fat soluble supplement, so it's really hard for your body to get the amount that it actually needs, which is why it's a really good idea, especially, you know, if you live in countries without much sun, it's a really good idea to supplement with it. So all this stuff is natural. It's there in your body anyway. It's just a case of, you know, see it like a little graphic EQ where you're just nudging it up in little bits and pieces until you get the perfect level for you, because everyone's going to be different. Whereas the, you know, the stuff that you get from the doctors, that's not natural. That's creating a bit more of a
chemical. You can feel it's chemical, can't you? You know, like when you change meds, like, you come off of one and go on to another. Like, I've done that, and like, I felt like properly strung out. Like, you know that there's chemicals in you getting around it. I'm going to give some of that a go. You know, I really am.
Oh yeah, I totally recommend. There's another one as well. I can't think at the moment exactly what that is, but I'll drop you an email and like give you what, you know, ones that I would suggest that you took. Something else that I've been trying now for a while is testosterone replacement therapy, because I'm, you know, of an age group where your testosterone levels, you know, get much lower as you get older.
Yeah.
But for men, you know, testosterone levels are quite important. So I've been on TRT for about 18 months or something now.
What's that then? Tablets?
They start you off on a gel to see how you are with that. And if that doesn't work, then it's injections.
Oh, really? Yeah. Fascinating. So what, you have to go somewhere?
No, Vicky does it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like every other day, I just have an injection of a steroid testosterone called enanthate. But there's several. There's three that they tend to prescribe you. And they all will have different ways that they do their job.
And how have you found that? Has that impacted? Like, is that, you know it's doing something?
Yeah, if you are, I mean, basically, male biology, once you get to 25, you know, historically, you're useless. You've done the baby making. So now, by the time you're 40, you should be dead. But, of course, we live much longer than that.
Yeah.
But from the age of like 25, your natural testosterone levels start dropping. And the thing is, it's unhealthy for a male to have low testosterone levels. You know, it needs a certain amount. It doesn't need to be a raging bull or anything like that. But it keeps you healthy. It keeps your, you know, your muscle strength there. It keeps your, like, your skin and stuff like that, elasticity in your skin. It gives you energy. So, of course, as people, you know, they get into their 40s and they start getting really fucking tired and stuff, and they just think, oh, this is, you know, just because I'm in my 40s and I get tired now. But it's not. It's just that your testosterone levels have dropped down to a point now where they're pretty much having no impact on you. So you just need to top them up.
Oh, interesting. I reckon my testosterone levels have been like really low since I was quite young because I've always been tired.
Yeah.
And I've never had like a lot of get up and go, really. I think, right, let's probably...
It's something in this country that we just don't seem... I mean, we'll accept quite happily that women have, like, the menopause.
Yeah.
The male menopause comes on a lot earlier. And with women, you know, their estrogen levels drop in menopause and then they start growing beards and going bald and stuff. So they have, you know, they have HRT to sort that out. Yeah. With men, you know, they need to have TRT to sort it. Sort it out and to find the right balance. But in America, it's you know, they're much more up on that sort of thing because I guess there's the financial incentive over there, you know, to just keep coming up with new things. Yeah. But here, it's I went to the doctor about it and I said, "Do you know much about TRT?" And he looked blankly. He said, "What's that?" And I had to explain to him what it was. So I thought, this isn't very good. So I basically went private. And you have a blood test. It reads all your levels. And then from that, they can see, you know, what's up. And then they can prescribe you accordingly.
Did you follow what they said? Or did you decide to drive home? Reminding you of the story in your book about when you went private.
Oh.
That was so gross.
It was gross.
It reminded me, and that was another one when it reminded me, you know, you said like you didn't have the proper anesthetic, like you didn't get kind of knocked out for it.
Yeah.
You decided to go with the injection. I had to have an operation on my arse. And I stupidly decided that I could drink water, surely, beforehand. And it turns out, no, you can't drink anything. And then they went, "You'll have to go home then." And I was like, no. Like, can't we, is there anything else we can do? And they went, "Well, we'll just inject you, like you had, just local anesthetic." Fucking proper mistake. Agony. And I was just, when you said that story, oh god, I know a bit about that.
Well, it didn't hurt. I was completely off my tits.
Yeah,
I absolutely loved it.
Lucky, yeah, I wasn't. I was just in fucking pain, and I'm gonna sit down.
I just remember once it kicked in, and I'm laying there, and I'm realizing there's this guy, and he's just cutting me up, and I'm going, "You're just like a murderer." Which is great when you've got someone, yeah, who's like, you know,
yeah,
there with the scalpel.
Yeah, that really made me laugh. I loved that. Yeah, that, I thought, yeah, that's a bit of me. So, yeah, we're going to have to wrap up. What I wanted to do was, the other thing that I really like about you, Dion, is that you do things your own way. You know, like, I really admire it when people, they don't feel the need, you know, like, everyone just trudges along with the person behind them and does what everyone else does. And, you know, like you said before about not really having, like, you work, don't you? But, you know, you're not following the normal convention with work. And I just really like that. I find that really, like, that inspires me. You know, people who do things their own way, they don't feel the need to just fucking follow along with everyone else.
I think I was quite lucky. My granddad had his own business, which was a much rarer thing back when I was a kid in the 70s to know somebody who owned a company. That seemed like such an amazing thing. And it sort of made me realize, oh, you don't need to work for other people. You can just work for yourself. So that was it. I thought, I don't care what I do, as long as it's not working for somebody else, because I knew I just didn't have, you know, I wasn't cut out for people telling me to do stuff and me agreeing with them on a long-term basis. So yeah, I've just, the amount of companies that I've started over the years, you know, the big long list of things that I've done to try and make money is quite ridiculous.
But you do. You do make money and you're doing it. And like, I think that's really cool. Mm. I felt the need to say that. And the other thing I wanted to ask is, what car are you driving now?
It's not a Porsche. It's still the Range Rover.
I didn't know if you still had a Porsche. My next door neighbour, when you were talking about the Porsches, I'm like, oh, what one's that? Because I knew a 911. Mm. And then I looked at it, and my where I grew up, the house behind us, he had a red one of those with the pop-up.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, oh, fuck yeah. I used to look at that car and think, oh, one day I'll have one of them, but in black, obviously, because everything I have. I like to be in black.
Yeah. I do want another one, but where we are here is a really, really remote rural location.
Yeah.
And it's a good few miles until you get to a decent road. And, you know, I don't have a garage here. And I look at them and I think, oh, I could get another one. But then I just think I'll just be looking at it when it's all like pissing down with rain and it's covered in mud. And I'll just be feeling sad and sorry for it again. And
yeah.
It needs a new home. So.
I'm going to fix it. Well, that's about it, mate. Thank you so much. Stay in touch. If ever I can help you out of anything, or if like your head's doing you in and you want someone to make a suggestion, I am here.
Likewise, you know, if you or anyone out there, you know, ever wants to get in touch, I'm always happy to be a sounding board. I guess being in the doing the band thing, one of the things that I've liked the most is that I've had people like in prison write to me and stuff like that, where they've been having like, you know, they're in prison, they're having a fucking shit time.
Yeah.
And I've become pen pals with them for a couple of years and just try and, you know, help them out. Not, you know, just not even necessarily giving advice, but just trying to help them see things with a slightly different perspective.
Yeah.
I wish I could do that sort of thing more for myself, because, you know.
I know.
But,
it's true. Like, we're always kind to other people. Someone said this to me recently. You're always really kind to everyone else, but you're never kind to yourself. And it's like, treat yourself how you would treat someone else if they were having a hard time.
Yeah.
That's fucking true, that one. That's hard to do, but, yeah, it's important.
It is. But yeah, so that's one of the things that I've liked the most is that over the years, I know, you know, that I've helped people out and people have let me know that. And that is the biggest pat on the back out of everything that I've done.
Oh, yeah.
That's the stuff. Just knowing that by me opening up at a time when, like yourself, you know, people, you know, men need to open up. You know, unfortunately, I've lost some friends through exactly the same disease, and it fucking destroys me that even though I was in a dialogue with them, you know, that day for whatever reason they didn't reach out and I might have been able to have helped. So that's one of the good things about, you know, the sort of thing that you're doing, is that just know that somebody out there is listening to one of your podcasts and, you know, it's changed their life and it's made them realize that there's another way and they don't have to suffer.
And like, exactly, you coming on here is exactly the same, you know, like even just having like an open conversation about suicide, it's like people just don't do it. It's like, actually, it's all right, you can, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, we can do it, we can talk, it's fine.
So, well, especially, I mean, now our age group is the most vulnerable one. It seems.
Yeah.
And I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier on, that the, you know, the man is basically biologically and historically useless by the time he's this age. And I think we kind of know that deep down, and we're fighting some pretty strong urges, I think.
Yeah, that's so true. I never really thought about it like that. Mm. I feel like, it, for me, like getting a bit older, I found it quite nice.
Mm.
You know, like you just suddenly, like a lot of that's gone, you know, like the pressure and shit and like you've got to do this. And then in some ways getting a bit older was all right. But then I had a point when I'm like, well, I've got a semi-detached house. I've got two kids and a wife. Oh shit, what do I do now? And I think, like, I did have a bit of a meltdown at that point. And I think a lot of that prompted me doing this in some way. So this is like, well, this is what I do now. You know, talk to people.
You channeled it in the right way anyway.
Yeah, I think so. But you have as well, mate. You have as well. Well, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed chatting with you. I knew it would be good. So I can't thank you enough, Sion. I really, really thank you so much. How do people find your T-shirts, your supplements, you know, like...
Well, don't do the T-shirts anymore. Sold the T-shirt company a couple of years.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I mean, if you just... You know, Facebook, Instagram, any of those places, just / Lord Zion, which is LORDZION, then you'll find me.
Thank you so much, mate. Yeah, shout anytime. And yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is the mouth of manliness. This is the mouth.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.